All right, can we get the Senate bill?
Oh, moment on the sound. Okay.
The House Water and Environment Committee will come to order. Welcome, everyone. We've got public hearing and several work sessions we'll be doing today. We're going to start with House Bill 2049. Welcome Department of Agriculture forward. Okay. We're also going to call up Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife at the same time. Eric.
I look like you're on my committee.
Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members. The record, my name is Chuck Craig. I'm the Deputy Director with the Department of Agriculture. With me this morning is Eric Rickerson from Department of Fish and Wildlife, who the department worked on a report that's related to this bill. And also on my far left is Roger Huffman, the administrator of our Animal Health and Identification Division. Madam Chair, to give you some background on House Bill 2049, I want to go back briefly to the 1997 session of the Oregon Legislature, which passed Senate Bill 1002. And one of the principal things that Senate Bill 1002 did was it gave the Department of Agriculture funding to sponsor a study, statewide study of wildlife damage to crops and livestock. And that study was conducted professionally and scientifically for us by the Oregon Agricultural Statistics Service, and it found that for the 1 year that the survey was conducted, that the estimated cost of damages to crops and livestock by wildlife was approximately $158 million. And that number got quite a bit of attention. And so the 99 legislature then, by budget note, directed the Department of Agriculture and the Department of Fish and Wildlife to review existing programs for reducing the damage to crops and livestock by wildlife and to report back to the emergency board and the appropriate substantive interim committee. And we did that, and I might just summarize that there were a large number of recommendations which you will find in the copy of the report to the e-board that we passed out. The top five were to establish an interagency wildlife damage committee consisting of agency and stakeholder group representatives to improve programs and assistance to landowners. Second priority was obtain full and continued federal funding for the Willamette Valley Goose Depredation Control Program. Maintain existing level of support for USDA Wildlife Services by replacing license revenue no longer available for this purpose. I think you may have heard a bill that's related to ODF&W's budget for pass-through money to Wildlife Services, and that's related to this point. Also, filling gaps in the geographic availability of assistance to landowners. Currently, there are some geographical gaps in the counties that participate in the cooperative agreement with Wildlife Services, so there are some counties where landowners don't have ready access to the assistance that Wildlife Services can provide. And then finally, getting into some of the more detailed and specific ones, we recommended that cooperative services with USDA Wildlife Services be expanded to include additional expertise in the form of a statewide bird and rodent specialists. The thing that the conclusion that led to the suggestion of this interagency wildlife damage coordinating committee was that after Department of Agriculture, Department of Fish and Wildlife, and our federal partners, USDA Wildlife Services, spent several months reviewing all of the applicable programs. We realized that altogether that the state and federal agencies and county governments were spending $5 million a year on trying to prevent and reduce wildlife damage to crops and livestock, but we had never developed any sort of a formal mechanism to try to coordinate these programs to establish more common objectives and try to improve the programs continuously and get more bang for the public dollar that was being spent. So some method of trying to coordinate and improve was one of the primary thoughts that we all had after recognizing this. And if you look at the last page of the report to the legislature that I handed out, you'll see a spreadsheet that shows where that number comes from of $5 million. So that's how this bill came about. We presented the report to the E-Board and to the Joint Interim Legislative Committee on Natural Resources, Ag, and Water, and discussed this concept, and everybody seemed to think it was a good idea and that we should move forward somehow with the discussion of it. What I think I should point out before I sort of conclude here and ask for questions is that there's quite a range of options here, from a formal statutorily created committee with stakeholders that are formally appointed and a dedicated employee to the process to make the effort as aggressive and proactive as it possibly can be, to the agencies doing this rather informally among themselves, but recognizing that if you do that way, that it'll be done on sort of a workload permitting basis and that the priority wouldn't be as high as if you attach some statutory importance to it. So, Madam Chair, that's what I had really intended to say by way of introduction on 2049. That's how it came about. It was drafted as a committee bill and introduced by the Joint Interim Committee.
Questions for Mr. Craig? I guess the only question I would have on the spreadsheet, looks like about $1 million of the $5 million comes to the federal government. And can we expect that money will continue to be received in those areas, the habitat improvement and goose control?
Madam Chair, I think that the goose control funding is sort of an annual struggle. It was in jeopardy at the time we were developing this report, and that was one of our recommendations to the legislature, is do whatever you can to get the attention of the appropriate folks federally to make sure this continues. And likewise, I think, we've heard about what some of the proposals for the federal government are. So I'm not so sure that I could be confident that these levels would be maintained forever federally. I think they're subject to the same kinds of ebb and flow that state financial resources are.
Second question, I guess the habitat improvement money, that's obviously the biggest chunk on the spreadsheet. What exactly do you do with that money?
Madam Chair, that I think that this money actually is more associated with the Department of Fish and Wildlife than with us. Perhaps I should backtrack a minute and explain what the roles of the agencies are. The Department of Agriculture has a fairly limited role in these programs. We pass through general fund from the legislature to USDA Fish and Wildlife Service. USDA Wildlife Service is a federal agency, provides direct control assistance to landowners, and they do that primarily, is primarily organized at the county level through a cooperative agreement between Wildlife Services and county government. The Department of Fish and Wildlife, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, has the responsibility for managing the state's wildlife, and they have a number of programs that are associated with trying to minimize the impact that wildlife has on agriculture, and I would want to let them speak to that. Then, as I mentioned, USDA Wildlife Services, a federal agency, is the one that provides direct control assistance to landowners. And then the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has responsibilities in this area related to threatened and endangered species. And so.
Okay. Thank you. Questions? Representative King.
Thank you. Your spreadsheet doesn't help me figure out general funds, you know, from Oregon general funds in there, and it'd probably be helpful if I would be able to see how much of that funding is ballot measure 66, and, you know, to what degree some of this, you know, funding comes through fees that come off of, you know, agricultural producers or, you know, fishing license, any dedicated funds that come there. I just can't get a very good picture out of this of how much general funds is in here.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Representative King, we'd be glad to try to produce a more detailed breakdown of that for you. What I know at the moment is that the $224,500 that's shown there is general fund in ODA's budget that is passed through to Wildlife Services. There also was approximately $80,000 per year of general fund in the Department of Fish and Wildlife, there was about $80,000 in ODF&W's budget that was passed through to Wildlife Services for that purpose as well, and that money had been derived from license fees, but there was a legal interpretation that indicated that that really was no longer permissible. So ODF&W was seeking an alternative way to fund that. As far as the mix on other ODF&W programs, I honestly can't tell you, and you know, with any authority, what that would be, but we'd be glad to work with them to get that information for you.
I don't think it'd be productive for us to kind of break it out here without it, but I need to do that. Also, what's WS on the spreadsheet?
That's USDA Wildlife Services, Representative King.
WS is
Wildlife Services.
Representative Morgan.
I was curious with the, I'm reading the fiscal analysis of the proposal, and there's a detail in here about the makeup of the commission or the committee. And I was curious about whether there was possibly some other entity that already existed that we could piggyback this function onto. Can you comment on this?
Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, one doesn't come to mind to me immediately, and my colleagues are shaking their head no also. So I don't know. We could think about that and see if we could come up with a suggestion of an existing organization that might be able to perform this function.
Thank you. Representative Hass.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've received some letters, and I assume we all have, that this is just another layer of government. This is just another bureaucratic committee on top of a bunch of others. What is your response to that?
Madam Chair, Representative Haas, I guess I think that what we have here is our efforts being made by state, federal, and local governments to perform a function operating fairly independently and with really not a great deal of coordination over history and not much in the way of intentional proactive efforts to integrate all the facets of this together in a way that would get the most for the public dollars that are being spent. So this committee would not really have any authority, and it's not a bureaucratic overlay. It's an attempt to find a way to get the agencies and the stakeholders together that have something at stake here and figure out how to do things more effectively. So I really wouldn't agree with that analysis. I think, though, that is certainly the question arises as to how much resources can you devote to a committee like this without taking a significant amount away from the funding that goes to actually doing the job on the ground. And that's where I would have some sympathy with that point of view there. But as far as whether the concept is just another layer or overlay, I don't agree with that at all.
Well, follow up.
What
I don't see is, if this is making it more coordinated and we're creating this additional layer, I don't see the elimination of something else that's been done in the past. I just see the addition, no subtraction.
Mr. Chair, Representative Haas, I'm not sure that you could eliminate anything until you got this group together and determined what that would be over a period. The first reaction you would get from everybody involved, all the stakeholders, is if you said we're going to cut this in order to do that, is wait a minute, that's my stuff you're cutting, and unless you can get a consensus to do that, I don't think it would go very far. So,
Representative King.
My question, I think, is related to what was just said, because we do see the fiscal, before us, but my understanding of the justification is the coordinating. And my understanding of the advantage of coordinating is to significantly reduce costs.
Mm-hmm.
So are we looking at a net cost, or when we spend $112,000, are we saving $250,000? Where's the picture of that?
I think that's to be determined, Representative King. I believe that given And I'd like to go back to the opening comment that I made, is that there's a range of options here. In the discussions that we had with the E-Board and the Interim Committee on Natural Resources, they felt that we should get a bill drafted so that this discussion should take place. I don't know that anybody is firmly attached to the formality and the expense of the committee, the formal committee, and the coordinator. So I think there's a range from the agencies doing this deliberately but more informally through a memorandum of agreement or something to having this kind of statutory construction. How much benefit you would get out of it, I think, remains to be seen, but I guess my impression from having participated in the review is that I think there's a lot of improvement that could be made, and I think that there's a substantial dollar value to that improvement, whether or not it's or how many times the cost of the coordinator it is, I can't tell you right now, but I think it would be significant.
To follow on that, I do have a bit of a concern in that, it's a new program and budget issues. You see a desire to coordinate, but I don't see any, goal of, you know, what's driving in terms of what, you know, what cost savings can be done. So, you know, I'm seeing that we're budgeting a request to get together and talk about something, and maybe somebody will come up with some savings, rather than it seems like, you know, there's a goal out there or a range. And, you know, so it's harder for me to vote for new funding for a new program, mm-hmm. you know, when I don't see any goals. I'm just seeing possible goals. I would want more.
Committee, I'm going to recess this hearing just for a moment. I know we have questions left from Representative Kupfori, Monis Anderson. However, Representative Smith is in the room, and he needs to get back to committee. So we're going to have the work session on his bill, and if you gentlemen would stand at ease for just a moment, we'll bring you back. Recess the public hearing on 2049. We'll open the work session on House Bill 2842, and Megan, could you refresh our memory on this bill?
Sure. House Bill 2842 requires the State Fish and Wildlife Commission to allow private hunting operators to use the plastic poultry leg band to mark game birds. And in our last hearing, we had a discussion about who had the responsibility of revoking licenses of operators if they were not compliant, and how that would be how a person could contest such a situation. So we have the Dash 1 amendment, which each having a packet, which replaces Section 3 of the bill. And it specifies that it is the department that may revoke or refuse to renew a license, and not the commission. It specifies that the license may not be issued to a person whose license has been revoked if the department, again, not the commission, determines the person is compliant with the state law or the administrative rules. Specifies the department may not revoke a license for the first violation. Again, that's a change from the commission having that responsibility. It specifies that prior to revoking or refusing to renew a license, the department is to serve a written notice, ordering the operator to notify the department within 30 days. That's also a change. The 30 days was a 10-day notification to the commission. And also it specifies that the conclusion of a contested case proceeding conducted by the department and operator may petition the commission for a review of the department's decision. And also, Madam Chair, Fish and Wildlife indicated that they did have examples of what a poultry lay and looks like if you're interested in viewing.
Couldn't hear that.
Oh, the department has plastic leg bands here today if you're interested in viewing those. As far as the
doesn't represent it close. Knows what we're talking about. Welcome, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Close, members of the committee. Last time I was before you, we went through this proposed bill, and I believe yourself and Representative Jensen had some excellent ideas on how to better this idea, and we took those ideas to Legislative Council with the assistance of Megan, and we've implemented all of those recommendations, and I'm back before you again today to try and move this bill forward for some constituents in District 59.
Representative, question for Representative Smith? Can we call forward ODFW with our sample?
Free sample.
All right.
Madam Chair.
All right, thank you.
Madam Chair, we gave out samples of BDs in my committee yesterday.
A BD?
A BD, yeah.
Is that legal?
But Madam Chair, I have a sample for everybody on the committee.
Being one up. Can you explain these holes? It is.
Representative Close, excuse me, Chair Close, for the record, my name is Eric Rickerson. I'm the Upland Game Bird Program Manager for the Department of Fish and Wildlife. Before you, you have a sample of poultry leg bands. Those are standard leg bands that are used in the poultry industry. That's what the shooting preserve operators are being asked or are asking to be able to be used. Currently, the way the regulations are, there's two forms in which they have to mark captive, reared, and released birds, one being a leg band issued by the department, which isn't a practice that's conducted very often. The other method is a toe clip, which involves basically removing an outside toe on a bird approximately 2 years of age. What this does, in fact, can increase, well, it does stress the bird, and it can increase mortality on those young birds in some cases. So therefore, I've spoke with a number of the shooting preserve operators. This is a much less stressful method on the birds, and it also requires less personnel commitment.
Well, that's something that didn't come up in the last hearing, that the humane issue. I guess I didn't realize they were 2 years old. I thought they were fairly newborn.
Chair Close, they are, I'm sorry, I may have spoke out of turn. It's actually 2 days old in which they do the toe clip, but it still does place stress on those birds.
Okay. Lots of blood. Question for ODF&W.
I have a question, but not for ODA.
Okay. Representative Montefiore.
Just a clarification on the bill. Say a preserve has multiple violations on one day. Would all of these violations count as the first violation? Just a matter of clarification, this may come up. Because I know in the it says that you cannot revoke a license for a first violation, but if there were multiple violations on one day.
Can you refer to the line now?
Basically 13 and 14 on the amendment.
Okay.
Somewhere that the department may not revoke a license for a first violation. And say a violation occurred on a day, but there were multiple violations on that particular day, and then realize, or who knows, due to ignorance, or maybe they did know, but they clarified the issue in that one day.
Chair Close, Representative Monis Anderson, as we put this together and as I understand this now that I read it, if there were multiple violations on one day, that a license could be revoked.
Okay.
Really what we were trying to get at is the folks in District 59 make tremendous investment, and this is a new arena for some of them, and they don't want to have that investment jeopardized by making an error and knowing that their license could be taken away from them on an error that, you know, they're hopefully not going to make again. And so they want to at least be able to have an opportunity to address that issue, to get a warning, basically.
I was just concerned that in that very instance, there could be multiple violations.
Right, right.
And on the same issue.
Right, and I, you know, as a responsible hunter myself, if there were multiple violations, I would hope that that appropriate action would be taken.
Madam Chair.
Representative Morgan.
A follow-up to Representative Monis Anderson's point, because I think it is a really important point, that my recollection of the discussions in the committee when we talked about this amendment were that we wanted to give the department the latitude to solve any problems that may result from a misunderstanding of the regulations and get a solution on the ground before they came in and revoked a license and set that whole process in place. So I would, I think that it would be very valuable to have it clearly stated on the record that the intent of this section would be to work out solutions to problems, and that the license revocation would be a path that would be undertaken when trying to work out a solution and work with the licensee became a problem and there wasn't the cooperation to solve the problem.
Chairman Close, Representative Morgan, that's truly the spirit of this legislation. Thank you.
Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a follow-up, too, on the conversation that we're having here now. I think it's important to note that the legislation does not say that there shall be a revocation of the license. I think there's latitude provided to the department in this case, and I think we always have to be conscious of trying to provide our departments with the latitude to use good judgment in some of these things. So I would be comfortable with where we're at with the wording as it is.
Further questions or comments? Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you bringing a little leg down so we can see it. Looks very non-threatening.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
But not biodegradable.
Yeah, if you were a bird, it might look different.
On behalf of the bird, we'll let Bruce do that.
The same trees has spoken on behalf of
the bird. And we won't say anything about brains. Okay. We are in work session.
Madam Chair.
Representative Jensen.
Madam Chair, I would move the -1 amendments to House Bill 2842.
Representative Jensen has moved the -1 amendment into House Bill 2842. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Madam Chairman.
Representative Jensen.
I would move House Bill 2842 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Jensen has moved House Bill 2842 as amended to the floor, due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Hearing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Smith is
not in the room.
He was in anyway.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to move that maybe we put it on the consent agenda that maybe...
I think we want Representative Smith to be able to present this. Okay. To the group and hold up his little thing.
Madam Chair. In the event that Representative Smith does not want to, I will volunteer to substitute for him.
Okay. We'll notice. And we'll check with Representative Smith on this, or we'll be Representative Jensen. Okay, we're going to come out of recess on House Bill 2049 and call forward our gentlemen so they can answer the questions. Department of Ag, ODSW. And at the point we were at when we recessed, we had questions from Representative Corey. Thank you. There are some bills in session there's been a lot of talk about. Bills relating to hunting on private lands, like the elk farm bills, and I guess I'm just how that must create a conflict then with the landowners next door if they aren't happy with, you know, they are having wildlife or crop damage due to wildlife. How is that conflict being resolved right now?
Chair Close, Representative Kafori, I guess I would ask for further clarification on that question.
Well, it seems like we have bills right now that are encouraging hunting on private lands, like the elk farm bills. And yet, on the other hand, we have bills that we need to spend more money to help with wildlife damage to crops. And it seems like there's some kind of a conflict there.
Madam Chair, Representative Kafori, again, for the record, Chuck Craig with Ag. The elk farm bills are designed specifically to raise elk commercially for subsequent sale of meat and elk products. They do not permit hunting of those domestically raised elk on elk farms.
Okay, follow up. But don't those elk stray onto neighboring?
They're required to be fenced, Representative Corey.
Okay.
Representative Monsanto, I believe you were next. Yes. Representative Morgan.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question, again, wanting to get back with trying to make this a non-funding issue. Because we should be in the mode, we are in the mode of having to cut and it's hard to want to be adding a new revenue or a funding source here. Another expense. So in the background that was provided to us, it says that there's $5 million already spent by two federal agencies, two state agencies, and 24 counties. And I would think that possibly out of that $5 million, $112,000 could be gathered.
Madam Chair, Representative Modus Anderson, I think that, you know, that's probably possible. The question is, you know, whose ox are you going to go, or whose program is going to be reduced to do this, and what would the reaction to the stakeholders be to that? I think that we have felt that, again, that there were a range of options that we could see for this, ranging from agencies trying to do this on a time and workload permitting basis and getting as much coordination and improvement done as they could that way, ranging all the way to assigning some level of priority to it and actually having a dedicated employee and a formal committee. I mean, your question, your issue is perfectly valid. I just don't know where we would do it and what kind of political reaction we would get.
Follow up. Just a comment. I mean, it's the same situation that we are in. We have all of these programs, and everyone says, no, don't cut mine, no, don't cut mine, no, don't cut mine. And we're going to have to be making some pretty tough decisions, and that's why I would like it to be on the record that I think the agencies have to make some pretty tough decisions, too, and start reevaluating some of the programs, their own programs.
Yeah. Madam Chair, if at some point here I think it would be useful if we went through what the duties of the coordinator would be to try to get at what the question that Representative King was asking. I don't want to interrupt the flow of questions from the committee, but I just wanted to suggest that's something we might want to cover.
Okay. So we have further testimony that you need to give. Representative Lee, can you ask your question, and we're going to go to the guests. Allow them to continue.
Oh, yes, thank you. And maybe your testimony will answer my question, but I'm aware of many natural resource agencies that have what they call RACs or advisory work groups, and I'm not sure why it justifies not just having an RAC without additional funding either, but you'll probably clear that up.
Well, I believe that's a possibility, mm-hmm. Representative Lee.
I'd like to see the bill, but maybe have it. Yeah. Mention this group without the funding.
Yeah. Madam Chair, I think what I do here is I ask Roger Huffman to go through the duties of the coordinator, since he's the one that thought through that and explain what those functions would be and what the benefits might be.
And Roger, you're with the ODF Committee.
Madam Chair, Roger Huffman, Department of Agriculture. I'm the Administrator of the Animal Health and Identification Division. And I'd like to maybe expand a little further on Representative King's question on the coordinator and talk about the duties. And one thing that we, as we went through this on the programs and gathered the information on existing programs and the need for the research and also some of the federal research that is already ongoing, there seemed to be, at least within the group, a lack of awareness even amongst ourselves of what the other agencies were already doing and what they had available to us. So we felt that there surely had to be a similar lack of knowledge about what was available to the landowners and those that are being affected by the predation of the wildlife. So as you can see in Section 5 of the bill, number 5, one of the key components we thought would be important is to have somebody that was proactive rather than agencies that right now are more of a reactive stage where somebody calls up and says, I really have a problem and I've been trying to deal with it, but I can't do it. It would be much easier, we think, if they, we could get some of the information out where this already existing studies and non-lethal control methods and those kind of things could be disseminated, and also to have a representative that wasn't necessarily a direct agency representative, because there is a obviously in the eastern side of the state, probably more so, there is, how do I say this, there's agencies, they don't particularly like to come forward and discuss some of these issues, but if we had one person that we've sent out, had meetings with them and could gather information in a setting that was non-threatening to them, or they didn't feel like that, we might get more and better information that could then be brought back to the committee and be addressed in a manner that was could be more useful, and we could direct these programs to target at those things. That's kind of the thought behind the coordinator on the proactive side. Because there is a tremendous amount of data that's already out there in programs and options. And just frankly, who to call. We get calls all the time about who does what with what particular species and animal. It is confusing. So that was the thought behind the coordinator. But as far as has been mentioned earlier, if we just had a gathering and stuff of the agencies, where the fiscal impact was targeted towards just reimbursing the committee members, that would also be a step forward, which we would have direct input from those, I guess, representative from those people, but not directly from those that are being affected. So.
Representative Johnson had a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't particularly have a question, but I certainly would entertain any responses or answers. So. From the panel to it, but simply an observation. We're talking about in the 1997 period, $158 million worth of crop damage. Now, as we think about this, colleagues, I ask you to think about the fact that that is about potentially $14.22 million worth of lost revenue to the state of Oregon via the tax structure. So there's a, and I don't claim, and I'm sure they wouldn't claim, that any of this would bring us to zero crop damage. But we are losing revenue as a state when our producers lose revenue too at a little less than, but approximately 10%.
Thank you.
Chairman Close, I'd like to add one more comment to Representative Jensen's. As I put that report together, $158 million was identified, and it was targeted on, it didn't talk about all wildlife species, and it didn't talk about all crops. One crop that we didn't put on there was not included in the $158 million, and has clearly been brought out in just last week in our budget presentation, was the damages to the timber production of the state, which can be considered a crop, which is not in the $158 million, but is considerable in some areas of the state. So I just wanted to bring that to your attention, that when you add that on top of the $158 million, the timber production, it is a much larger figure than that.
Okay.
Morning, Chair Close, committee members. Once again, for the record, my name is Eric Rickerson, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and I just wanted to expand upon a little bit what Mr. Craig said in support of House Bill 2049. What this bill would offer is four primary improvements in the current way that we address wildlife damage here in the state. First, as he had mentioned, it would bring together all government agencies to deal with wildlife damage to improve our public service commitment that we do have to them. It would also provide a method for the public to have a formal input into any current or proposed damage programs. Third, it would improve the flow of information from agencies and from researchers to private landowners and in proper ways and better ways to implement damage control measures. And lastly, it would enhance cooperation among landowners and government agencies and other interested stakeholders in addressing this issue. And with that, I'd just conclude my presentation. Would entertain any questions you might have.
Questions, Representative Jensen.
I think there's been, some very compelling questions presented to you this morning in relationship to the funding and the budget. And I know you're all aware of this from other parts of your departmental budget, as we all, quote, unquote, feel a pain. My question is, would there be would the departments be receptive to, if the committee is to decide to go along with this, would they be receptive to a sunset clause and an amendment that would give us a cost analysis in relationship to the gained income as far as the state is concerned?
Chair Close, Representative Jensen, certainly we would be willing to do that.
Mm-hmm. Further questions? Representative Moss Center.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let's go to the who makes up the coordinating committee and just explain a little bit to me. It's in section two. It seems to me on the surface that it's representing everyone fairly equally. But when you say that that you have the following voting members and you list four groups, the State Department of Ag, the State Department of Fish and Wildlife, State Board of Ag, State Fish and Wildlife Commission, then the five members, each of whom, I guess I need to, could you just go over what this means, and is it really representation? Is it seems heavily sided with the landowners, I think, but maybe not. Can you just go over that with me?
Yes, Representative. I think that was the intention, was to have substantial representation of the landowners. We had originally proposed or thought that the federal agencies should be voting members, but legislative council advised us that there's a constitutional problem with that and that you can't do that. So they are ex officio members, but it's essentially the landowner stakeholder sort of groups in the agencies that would be represented on the committee.
Follow-up then. Environmental concerns and wildlife concerns, if there was a really significant impact, they would just be outvoted, it looks like.
I think that, we did provide for one member that would represent professional wildlife conservation concerns in order to make sure that those issues were voiced at the committee.
Madam Chair.
Representative Jensen.
There are many of the people in the body who think one of the departments recognized in this bill is already overly representative of the environmental interests.
I think it should be pointed out, too, that the committee would receive public input, so the public can be there testifying.
Thank you. Other questions, Representative Williams?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I still have a concern about the cost, because this talks about compensating the members of the committee. Most committees are not compensated when individuals take part in them, and the service and supplies seems to be a very significant add-on to the personal services. I'm not sure why it wouldn't be productive just to
have a half-time staff person from an existing agency without all of the additional costs and without compensating members of the committee. And if we were to do that, maybe the fiscal gets down to something like $40,000 or $50,000, which might be a little more doable.
Would that be direction from the chair for us to come back with a proposal of that nature?
We do have three more witnesses that want to speak to this, but that is what I am thinking, that we could put together a work group that could talk about how the cost could be decreased on it. I think there's support for this type of group, but there's some details that would need to be worked out.
We'd certainly be willing to work in a work group on that, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, thank you very much for your presentation. We'll go to Richard Cohen, who is against this concept.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Good morning.
For the record, my name is Richard Cosasan. I represent the Oregon Sheep Growers Association. The association is generally not opposed to the concept contained in House Bill 2049, but is opposed to the bill. Primarily, the reason for opposition is you are taking dollars away from programs that we believe should go on the ground. In your packet of information, on your first page, you'll see the dollars broken out for wildlife services funding, and that funding comes from basically the general fund through the Department of Ag to Wildlife Services. If you take a look at it for the periods of 89 to 91 to the 99-2001 biennium, with the exception of infusion of approximately $100,000 last budget cycle, the funding has remained flat for a period of 10 years. You put it in comparison to your growth in your general fund, it's far outshadowed. In that packet is a copy of the damage survey from 1997, and I think you've already received that. But past that survey, you'll see an outline of dollars in terms of the cooperative program, the dollars received from USDA APHIS, Wildlife Services, the Department of Ag, Fish and Wildlife, individual participating campus, individuals that assist with the funding, and the total dollars. Currently, you have approximately 25 counties participating in the cooperatively funded program. Deschutes County, I guess, which my understanding is expected to participate in the program as of July 1 of this year. The next couple of pages break out some dollars in terms of perspective, the growth or lack thereof for funding through the Department of Ag. Again, the next would delineate dollars growth through Department of Fish and Wildlife. From 89 to 99. The next page is an identification of the participating counties. But for an extended period of time, the dollars have not reached the program level. 2049, we believe, could be done on an informal basis. It's too expensive, and I think those dollars should go to predator control purposes. If you look at the bill, it stipulates that you're going to have two meetings a year for $112,000. I have not seen the fiscal, but to me that's rather excessive. You have a 13-member committee. I think that's overly large. I think these people, in the sense that it is a cooperatively funded program, with some general informal direction, could very readily meet, get together, and review the program and program progress,
during the course of the next year or two without the cost. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Jensen.
I'm not sure, Richard, but I'm gathering from your testimony that you think there has been in the, without looking through exactly, but there's been a failure to keep up with the general fund, you know, for the amount of money spent in this area. Is that correct?
Madam Chair and Representative Jensen, very much so.
In relationship, you know, to this, if 100% of this money were to go to dedicated to just this fund, would that catch it up?
Madam Chair, Representative Jensen.
I'm sorry.
Just out of interest, we went back and took a look at the dollars that are provided to the program through the Department of Ag, which is one small piece of the pie. But we applied those dollars from 85 forward, and we took a cost of living adjustment. And if you took the cost of living adjustment with no other inflationary factors involved, for the 99-2001 biennium, we estimated that the dollars, again, based on the cost of living adjustment, should be around $525,000. So it's continued to be, I think, put on the back burner.
Follow. I guess in light of the fact that you're telling me you're fighting a losing war now, I'm not sure how compelling the case is against the bill when there might be a possibility with more visibility that those revenues might be turned around.
Madam Chair, Representative Jensen, in terms of coordinating and directing the participants and the interested parties to cooperate or to sit down and take a look at a review of the program, I think that's a very strong idea. But some general policy direction, I think, would be good to develop another layer, another program, another expense, removing the dollars from on-the-ground programs to a coordinating council. I don't believe is prudent in light of the financial constraints that the program has been under for an extended period of time.
Okay, Morgan.
I think that clearly the ag community and the timber community has a problem with dealing with wildlife damage, and that there would be a public purpose served to having all of the agencies and the landowners put their heads together to try to come up with some reasonable and efficient ways to deal with this problem. I've got a problem with the price tag of it. Do you think that there are ways to redefine the scope or the makeup or the operation of the committee to get the price of it down?
Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, yes. I think the policy direction from the committee, this committee or a budget committee, in terms of suggesting that the interested parties meet once a year, twice a year, quarterly, on an informal basis, I think you can accomplish the same goal and incur basically no cost at all. And I think those dollars, again, should go to the program versus a, quote, coordinating council.
Thank you.
Well taken. I want you to answer one question for me. You've got your graph, structural damage by species. It came from the Oregon Agricultural Statistics Service. And you've got the damage from deer and elk being, is that $3 million? It says that in thousands of dollars. Is the damage $3
million? Madam Chair, I'm sorry, I'm not picking up on your reference right now.
Okay, well, it's this structural damage graph. It's got I'm not sure what page that is in your packet.
Correct.
Okay. I'm just wondering, is the number there, if it's in thousands of dollars, is that 3 million then?
3.3 million, approximately 3,300,000.
Okay. And then you go to this graph, this spreadsheet that we had earlier about the green forage program under ODFMW. I'm just wondering about cross purposes here. I'm just wondering if there's $3 million of damage and then we're putting in forage for deer. Is that what's going on with another half a million? I mean, are there some cross purposes here that this type of coordinating committee might deal with?
Madam Chair, perhaps. I think if you were to talk to some individuals directly involved in the predator control program, Wildlife Services, for example, they would take exception with the indication that you're expending $5 million on wildlife damage programs. I think a lot of the dollars there are not hard dollars in the sense that are they going to Wildlife Services or predator control programs on the ground. I think some would argue very strenuously that these are not hard dollars, but rather soft dollars that kind of get lost in the shuffle.
Okay. Any questions? Representative Monica Anderson.
And again, this is clarification, and I'm not sure who is the right person to answer, but I keep being informed that we're losing farms. There's not as much farmland. Yet every one of your graphs shows Department of Ag, ODFW, well, I can see ODFW, but going up. Do you have a comment to make on that?
Madam Chair, Representative Monis Anderson, to put it in perspective in terms of the sheep industry, you could go back 3 to 4 years. Oregon was, surprisingly enough, one of the 7th largest sheep and wool producers in the United States. In the last 24 to 36 month period, we've lost approximately 40 to 45% of the numbers of sheep in the state. People are leaving the business. One of the factors is continuing predation. It's a very severe problem.
Representative Martin.
Just to add a comment to that, to kind of give Representative Monis Anderson the scope of the picture. If you raise sheep, you look at predation from the point of view of coyotes and cougars and those kinds of things that eat your sheep. But predation is also a herd of wild elk coming down and eating all the grass that you're trying to grow to feed your sheep. So it kind of comes at people from several different ways.
And I think another example would be in the timber industry where they have the seedlings that they're trying to reforest, and the elk also, the deer come and nip those right down to the ground. So they have to have little plastic things to put over those seedlings and to try to protect them.
Further questions? Thank you, Richard.
Thank you.
Katie Kate, Oregon Cattlemen's Association.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Katie Kate, representing the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. We agree with the policy statement in the beginning of Section 1 that would increase the communication and coordination of a predator controls program. And we definitely support increasing the state's funding of predator control programs. However, this increased funding needs to get on the ground and to get at the county level to manage the predator damage that's being done. The letter that's currently being handed out is from the Wasco County Livestock Association, and this is a county that does have a half-time person, I believe, from Wildlife Services to do county trapping. However, due to the passage of Measure 5 a few years ago, this funding at the county level is being just strapped down and very tight. And this is programs at risk, and the county livestock producers and others that benefit from a wildlife services program have been working for the past 2 years to maintain the program. And it's very hard for them. Some of them live in very rural areas, and it's one of the only services they see coming from their tax dollars is wildlife services. And we have county areas that are losing funding and are at risk of losing this needed program. The Oregon Cattlemen's Association cannot support putting a state bureaucrat in an office in Salem. This money is greatly needed to be spent on the program, but it needs to be at the county level. And with that, I can answer any questions.
Questions for committee. Representative Lee.
In reference to the Wasco County letter where it talks about the wild pigs being a problem, are wild pigs animals that can be hunted or shot, or are they protected?
Madam Chair and Representative Lee, we have a bill, well, actually the Department of Agriculture has a bill that the Cattlemen's Association is supporting that will define feral pigs and swine as predators. So then they will be part of the Wildlife Services Program, and landowners will be able to manage them on their land.
Thank you.
Further questions? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
Our last witness is Pete Cass from Oregon Farm Bureau.
Good morning, Representative Chairman Close, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Pete Test, Associate Director of Government Affairs for the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. And we support the concept behind this bill also, but we look at it maybe a little broader than just the predator control issue. And most of what my colleagues mentioned about predator control is valid, but we're more concerned about the millions of dollars that are lost to crops from wildlife that we would not consider predators, I assume, the public's wildlife, everything from elk to deer, antelope to ground squirrels. Much of this damage is really important to us to be in some way, as you'll see by several bills that we have in the future, compensation or some help in trying to live with the losses. This committee, it seemed to me, or something similar to it, and I kind of like just for Jan Lee's, or Representative Lee's thoughts related to it, we're losing enough money that our people will come for nothing. We don't have to have per diem if this committee would work to help with the problem. That the programs aren't coordinated. There's a lot of coordination to some extent because of the way funding is with the predator control. But there's limited coordination to some of the other programs, the crop damage and that kind of stuff. And also there's probably limited care and oversight to see how the programs that are out there are working. How is a green forage program working? Is it working well? Are there other programs out there that we might look into that would help offset? And a committee such as this working with landowners who are really taking the beating, and if you had my phone calls, you'd understand that this is a major concern out there. These people as they see their third crop of alfalfa go down the tube or no crop this year with a drought disappear to elk or deer, that there is a problem out there. So this committee to me looked like one of the avenues to get us on the right track to try and do this until I heard the fiscal. And I have to agree, we have limited amount of funds, $5 million, and that's not state money. That's just a little of that is state money. And $112,000 to $150,000 is a big chunk out of that money that we need to try and get the programs on the ground. And I would be really interested in working to try and see if we can move this into an advisory committee type situation where it would not cost that kind of money to do the job. And if it works, then we can look into expanding it in the future, if it could really be something that would work there. But the department did a really good report in trying to lay out the programs, both departments, that are available for depredations. I think the problem is they have not had the time to sit down and really analyze, are they working and how can they work better? And I think such a committee would work. I support the concept. also like the idea that we take a look at how we do this and reorganize and take a look at the cost, see if we can reduce it to something that's a little more reasonable. With that, I'll be happy to answer any questions you might have related to the bill.
Ms. Morgan.
More of a comment than a question, Chair Close. It seems to me that there is broad agreement that we are having problems coordinating the efforts that relate to predators on the land, and that there is room for a higher level of coordination between the agencies, state and federal, and local, and the landowners in trying to figure out successful or more successful ways to deal with it and share the successes and share the, some of the problems and try to seek solutions. But like I said before, it's a great idea, but I think that Katie was right on in her testimony that taking money from operations on the ground to do that is, I think, not the best way to look at it. And it may be a concept that is right for a work group. If we could bring together people from the Ag and ODFW and the Farm Bureau and the cattlemen and different constituent groups that would be interested in working out a proposal that would bring people together and give them some kind of purpose that we could use as a benchmark for performance. And bear in mind that we don't want to spend any money on this, and bring a proposal back to the committee. That may be a way to look at it.
Thank you, Representative Morgan. That is my feeling as well. I do want to call forward ODFW has asked. You had a question,
Excuse
Kate?
Excuse me.
No, not a question. I assume we're getting towards the end of the testimony, and as I wanted to weigh in. Madam Chair.
It's been unusually quiet. It's been really difficult for us. Dennis Cruz, we welcome your comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Things like this frustrate the heck out of me. They absolutely do. You know, when I look at the agencies involved here, this is within their scope of work. It absolutely is, and they should be coordinating. They should be cooperating within scope of work, you know. And what frustrates me is when government decides that the way to deal with a problem is to create more bureaucracy. You know, I have yet to see in statute provisions that prohibit agencies from working together. You know, I agree that this is important. I agree it needs to be looked into. I also agree that on-the-ground programs should have the top priority, and I personally think they can do this without any legislation whatsoever. And so this is a real frustration for me that why they aren't already doing it, I don't understand.
I guess what I would respond is that although agencies can work together, if they have cross purposes, sometimes they may not want to work together, and my feeling is that is when the legislature needs to come forward and say, you will. But I agree that the fiscal is a big problem.
Madam Chair, just in follow-up, this is within their mission. It's not a matter of whether they want to. This is within their mission. This is what they should be compelled to do by their very existence.
Your family.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. I agree that it is within the scope of the agency's current work, but I think having the bill brings attention to the need for this to be done. So I would be okay with the bill, but I think that it needs to have no fiscal impact or very little, and that there does need to be a report back to this group or some kind of process where we find out what occurs in the process.
Representative Lee, would you be interested in getting a group together at your direction to address this issue? We have a number of people saying they would be willing to work on it, so I'll leave it to you and you can report back to us.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Chair Close. Just two other things. I was visiting with Gil Rodell back there with the Oregon counties, and he'd like to see the local government change the counties in the bill, because if there is such a bill, because counties are really the ones that are putting it out, and clarify it wouldn't be others. And also, I think just as a final thing, the problem with this issue is it's only dealt with once every 2 years. It's once every 2 years at the legislature. And then we come here ill-prepared and uncoordinated and not really prepared to do the job, and we end up with the same kind of limited success each time, which bodes to a situation where there should be some continuous in-between effort so we can coordinate something and come up with something that's worthwhile at the end. That might speak to having something, whether it be, as Representative Cruz is concerned or Representative Lee, I think something has to be going on in that two-year interim. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2049, and we will look forward to the reports from the work group. And I would ask Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife if you could, you had more things you wanted to add. Could you add them at the time of the work group return? Committee, we had next on our list public hearing and work session for 3108 dealing with Social Security numbers. That bill has been worked out behind the scenes. We found we don't need that bill, so that one is going away. One of the very few that can be handled that way. I commend those who are able to work that out. 3108.
Which bill?
3108.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Has this had any public hearing at all?
You want to wait?
Yeah.
No.
You want to do a tap on it to save your...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good relating clause.
We're going to open a public hearing on 3108, House Bill 3108, and we're going to close a public hearing on House Bill 3108. And I'm going to open a hearing on House Bill 3730. And staff will read the...
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, House Bill 3730 extends the sunset date for the landowner preference tag program that allows the transfer of the tag and allows additional landowner preference tags to be issued by the State Fish and Wildlife Commission. And this is very similar to a bill we heard just last week, just another kind of different angle dealing with the issue of extending the program.
Okay, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, Eric Richardson, to join us again.
I'm ready to vote.
Good morning again, Chair Close, committee members. Once again, for the record, my name is Eric Rickerson, representing the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. I come before you this morning to offer our support for House Bill 3730, which extends the sunset clause to the year 2010 for the law relating to the department's landowner preference program. This program is very valuable to the department in two primary ways. First, it allows private landowners with wildlife issues on their property to, number one, recreationally hunt for deer and elk on their property. This is particularly important in light of the fact that many opportunities to hunt deer and elk are diminishing. And second, the program is an important tool which the department uses to help landowners alleviate wildlife damage on their agricultural crops. Removal of this clause will continue to provide ODFW a valuable tool to assist private landowners, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Questions, Representative Cruz?
Madam Chair, I'm ready to vote.
You're not quite in work session, but we will be there soon.
Just a comment, Madam Chair, that in this is really interesting to have this bill come up after the one that we just spent a long time discussing. Because this is one of the important tools in dealing with the problem that we talked about, and allowing landowners special hunting regulations on their own property is really an important way to deal with the elk herds and the deer and the different things that Representative Cruz and I spend a lot of our time listening to people complain about when we go back home.
Further questions?
Chair Close, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Rod Harder, Executive Director of the Oregon Sportsman's Defense Fund. My testimony will be very brief.
This is a real clean bill. It's much cleaner than the last bill we brought before you. Representative Morgan has read my speech. He just gave my speech. And a good bill should pass.
All right.
Questions for Rod?
Very well put, I thought.
Thank you very much. Okay, closing the public hearing. I'm opening the work session, Representative Cruz.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3730 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Cruz has moved House Bill 3730 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative House? Aye.
Representative
Jensen? Aye.
Representative
Ford?
Aye.
Representative King?
Aye.
Representative Cruz?
Aye.
Representative Lee?
Is excuse.
Representative
Morgan?
Aye.
Representative
Morgan?
Aye.
Chair
Close?
Both sides. Madam Chair?
Motion.
Yeah, okay. I move House Bill 3730 be placed on the consent calendar.
Okay, Representative Cruz has moved that House Bill 3730 be placed on the consent calendar. That means there would be no carrier and no debate. Representative Morgan may not want to go with, but discussion.
I think this is a good bill to put on the consent calendar. I don't think this is a controversial issue at all. It just simply extends a sunset to an existing program.
I guess I would like to hear your eloquence on the floor.
On this issue.
Well, that's curious.
I would support the motion to put it on the consent calendar.
Okay.
Madam Chair?
Representative Jensen.
I was half tempted to vote no, just so that Representative Cruz and Representative Morgan would have the opportunity to practice a little on the floor.
Well,
but I will support the motion.
Representative, we will have ample opportunity in the time ahead.
Representative Cruz and Morgan don't need any practice. However, Representative Westland. Good bill. Go ahead.
I would move that we allow Representative Lee to vote since she has come back.
Okay, we do have a motion on the floor that we'll need to deal with first. So if there's no further discussion, the clerk will call the roll on this motion.
Representative
Hatt?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Cruz?
Aye.
Representative King?
Aye.
Representative
Cruz? Aye.
Representative
Lee? Aye.
Representative
Montanus?
Aye.
Representative
Morgan? Aye. Chair Close? Okay. Motion carries. Done. And House Bill 3730 goes to the floor. Representative Savory.
I move that we reopen the work session on House Bill 3730 and allow Representative Lee the opportunity to vote.
Representative Kifori has asked that we suspend the rules and return to House Bill 3730 and allow Representative Lee to cast the vote. Is there any...
Allow what?
Representative Lee to cast her vote on this bill.
Oh.
Is there any discussion?
No.
Is there objection?
No.
Representative Lee, how do you vote?
I vote aye. Thank you, Madam Chair. I apologize for being out of the room. You moved so quickly.
We're moving now. Motion carries. If there's nothing else for the good of the committee, we are adjourned.
Madam Chair? What do we do in this case? We've already passed the consent, and if she votes no.
I don't know if that's
going to be
excited.
You don't
know that?
I wouldn't do that. You have a card or a phone number?
My guy? There's a landowner preference.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't need my landowner.
Great. Thank you.
And the sale.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Get something together. Hold up, everybody.